Buongiorno. I offered to let my son take over my notes and I would do the prayer. It was a great deal, I thought. He didn't go for it, though, so you have to put up with me. It's wonderful to be here again. I'm here with my wife, Elizabeth, and as you heard, our son, Jordan, my daughter, Courtney. Just wonderful to be here again for the second time in Italy and share the feast with many people we've seen before and all the new faces we haven't yet met. So great to be here. It's been a wonderful beginning to the feast. The seven dumbest things you waste money on. Four surgeries you should avoid at all costs. 10 foods you're eating completely wrong. 11 things you should never do again after 50. Anybody heard any of these before? If you've been on the online at all, most of us have. We're, as we heard yesterday, we're in the data information distracted consumer age. If you've been on the web, you've seen these at the bottom of just about every web page you visit. They're known as clickbait. And they're put there by advertisers to get you, to tempt you, to hook you to click on their that line, whichever one grabs your attention so that you can generate advertising income for them. Well, they are attention grabbing. And I'd like to think, because you know we know that, and I know you know they're there for that purpose, that none of us would click on them. Has anybody been guilty of clicking on them? I like to think that I click on those that really are helpful information. I mean, after all, I'm 52, and I think it's pretty important to know what I shouldn't be doing after age 50. As it turns out, one of those things you shouldn't do after age 50, just so you're aware, is you should never break wooden planks over your head. I've stopped. And if you're still doing that and you're over 50, you should stop. Now, it's not healthy. It does something to the brain. I don't know. Turn, if you would, over to Psalms 1, Psalms chapter 1. God gave us, in his word, quite a few lists as well, didn't he? There are the Ten Commandments. There are the Beatitudes, the fruits of the Spirit, the six things the Lord hates. Seven are an abomination, and there's many more. We can come up with all sorts of lists, but these lists that God gives us are worlds apart from anything that we're going to see on some web page. And you won't find any advertising there, for one, but what we find here in God's Word are truly life-changing, truly are important and life-giving to us. And one of those life-changing, life-giving lists, which I'd like to go through briefly this morning, is found here in Psalms chapter 1. And let's read the first verse. Psalms 1, verse 1 says, "Blessed is the man." How's that for an attention-getting line? Blessed is the man. Who could not want to read that, to understand what that has to say? Do you want to be blessed? I want to be blessed. I know what it takes to live an abundant life of spiritual blessings, because that's in fact what we're talking about, right? Spiritual blessings. Certainly there are physical blessings for living a life, striving to live a life according to God's word, but it's really what we're talking about here are the spiritual blessings that we truly yearn for, because those are the ones that prepare us to serve both now in this world that we live in and in the one to come, in the kingdom that we're here to picture, to hope for. And so I'd click on that link, and I'd like to think all of us here would. So let's click on that link and see where it takes us. There are four things. There are three things listed here that we shouldn't do, and there's one very important, very critical thing that it tells us that we must do if we're all to live thriving, abundant, blessed lives. So let's go through them. First, the three things that we shouldn't do. Beginning again in verse 1, Psalm 1, here's the first one. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. Well, that makes sense. It's fairly intuitive. We shouldn't look to the world. We shouldn't look to those who don't rely on the teaching of God's word for guidance. God's word is inspired by him. We should look to that for our counsel. We shouldn't be looking outside of that. We shouldn't be looking to the Warren Buffetts, the Dr. Phils, the Deepak Chopras, the Oprah Winfreys of this world for guidance in spiritual matters or on even how to attain happiness. God's word, of course, as we know, is our standard of truth. It should be our guide and our counsel. And everything we see, everything we do, our entire life is to be run through that filter of what God's word tells us and measured against the righteous counsel that we find there. So, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, but instead in the counsel of God's word. So that's the first one. Here's the second one. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners. Now, that's also fairly intuitive, but there's that word there that's interesting. It says stands in the path of sinners. And to me, it kind of paints a picture of the person who, you know, maybe I'm not completely in lockstep with sinners. I'm not like on the path and heading in that direction, but I got my foot in there. You know, I'm kind of on the path, maybe straddling it a little bit. You know, I'm considering it. I'm playing with the idea, getting as close as I can to the world without really going all in and committing myself. James 1:8 tells us that a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. And so straddling that path is definitely not a recipe, and I think we understand that, for happiness. If we're to be blessed, if we would be happy, live abundant lives, we shouldn't stand in the path, not even stick a toe in the path of sinners. So as I said, I think that's also fairly intuitive to most of us. But then there's a third one, and perhaps that's a little less clear. It says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, and here it is, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. What does that mean? Well, the word scornful here comes from the Hebrew word lutz, L-U-W-T-S, pronounced lutz, which means to boast or to deride, to mock, or to scorn. And it has to do with looking down on others. It has to do with finding value, our own value, by comparing ourselves to others and belittling either outwardly or inwardly other people in order to justify or exalt our own sense of self. Proverbs 3:34, I won't ask you to turn there, but it tells us, Solomon writes here, surely he scorns the scornful, but he gives grace to the humble. So godly humility doesn't measure its worth by comparison with others. It measures its worth against nothing other and no one else but God, God's standard. And in that comparison, there's the constant realization of how short we fall. There's a constant realization that we need God's mercy. We rely on his grace, and he freely gives it to us. And in doing so, we then fall under God's abundant blessings. So if I would be blessed, if we would be blessed, we then should not sit in the seat of the scornful. Okay, so if we're to be happy, if we're to be blessed, what should we do? It's not a long list. There's one more thing it tells us. And we're told what we shouldn't do, but there's some things that we're told we should do. And let's read again here in Psalms 1, beginning in verse 1. To recap, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. And in his law, he meditates day and night. This is the one thing we should do. How can we find blessings in this life while we wait for the one to come? Well, it says delight. Delight in the law of the Lord. And so we have a really beautiful picture of what it looks like painted here in verse 3. In verse 3, it says, he, that person who would be blessed, shall be like a tree that's planted by the rivers of water, and that brings forth fruit in its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. Isn't that a beautiful picture? If we're delighting in the law of God, we're going to be like this tree. And like this tree, two things then are going to be happening in our lives. First, we're going to be firmly planted by the river. And so we have to develop a root system that's drinking down in under the banks of that river, into the soil, drawing strength from God's word, drawing strength from his teaching and the life that he can give us. And secondly, and it follows upon the first, and it can only follow upon the first, there's a healthy spiritual growth that then will spring up from that tree and will be evident. There's fruit that will be visible. But both have to be in place for that tree to be blessed, for that tree to thrive. You can't have one without the other. And it's important, I think, we understand that, because sadly, we probably all know Christians for whom both were not in place, right? Some have gotten them a little out of balance. There are some Christians who have this huge root system. I mean, this root system is digging deep, and these are the Christians who spend a great deal of time drinking in of God's word. The Christians who spend countless hours studying in the quest for ever deeper knowledge, a quest for understanding. And they can pontificate about all the nuances of doctrine, nuances of prophecy, meticulously parsing out every last word in God's book, in God's word. The problem is, not that that's wrong in itself, but there never seems to be much going on above ground. There's a lot of root there, but not a lot of abundant growth. Their delight is in knowing the law of the Lord, you see, not in delighting in the law of the Lord. And there's a difference, isn't there? There's a difference. And they're all root, but they're little growth, and we sometimes trip and stumble over those people a little bit. But then there are those people for whom the opposite is true, isn't it? There are those who have the appearance of amazing fruit, amazing growth that's going on above ground. They throw themselves into serving and giving, but there's not the root system that's deep in to support that. It's too shallow. And the reason it's shallow is because they draw their strength, they draw their energy, their passion from serving and from doing and from giving. And those things are all obviously wonderful in themselves, but that's where they draw their strength from. They delight in the love and the acceptance that's expressed for their giving and serving to others. And as long as they're getting fed, you see, by that praise and the good feelings they get from it, they seem to thrive. But the tragedy is, both for them and those who come to depend on the things, the service that they provide, their leadership, their encouragement, their example, is that when that praise quits flowing, when storms come, they can quickly get burned out. They can easily be blown over or washed away. And unfortunately, they can take a lot of good people with them, because the root system just wasn't that deep. And so the heart of the one, the lesson for us, I think, is the heart of the one that delights himself in the Lord, in the law of the Lord, finds its value in him. He, she plants himself or herself by living waters, digs deep down and growing in a strong root system that can continually draw strength from the water of God's word. And so that it's able then to grow up and to show him to the world, to be a light, to bear fruit that God can use to minister, to serve, and to witness appropriately to others. This is the one that will be truly blessed in this life and fully prepared for the one to come that we're here to hope for. Psalms 1, again. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. I'm sure that I'm going to still click on a few lists at the bottom of those web pages from time to time. I mean, who can't? If we live in a distracted world, I'm as guilty as any of us. Who doesn't want to know the 7 best ways to prevent male pattern baldness, after all? It's important. There are some things you have to read. But for the keys to true happiness, to be truly blessed in this life and in the kingdom to come, and I'm very thankful, and I hope all of you are, and I know all of you are as well, that our God put everything that we need to know for life in his word. And as a bonus, it comes with no advertising.